You're listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, recorded in Kingston, Ontario, Canada. Welcome back to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep in Society podcast, episode 16. Welcome back, Ruhi.
Thank you, Mike. Good to see you.
Good to see you. How are you doing today?
I'm actually doing really well. And yourself?
Yeah, quite good. I'm really enjoying in Kingston. It's finally a little bit consistent cold weather. I do like seasons, so I'm enjoying that I'm getting a little bit of cold weather.
Yeah, me too. So I was looking forward to. Yeah, I enjoyed the snow. I like that.
I think I would miss if I didn't have seasons wherever I lived. You know, I like the variety of it.
So, yeah, me too. Yeah, we're very fortunate.
Yeah, absolutely. This week we're kind of continuing to talk about a topic that we've really talked about over time when it comes to self-regulation and exercise, which is something that the past couple episodes is really themed to. This week, we really dive into something that I think a lot of people will recognize in themselves has happened, which is when burnout can come. Burnout of the body, but also burnout of the mind, which is something...
Starts with the... Yeah. It's bidirectional, the relationship.
Well, okay. Well, maybe talk about that to start. Like, what do you mean by it's bidirectional?
Well, in terms of me, look, and going back to my case study, the initial, because it was the physical process that I was so devoting so much of my energy and time to exercise, hours upon hours, even while I was injured. And to the point that it became such a chore that I was disconnecting.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the mental burden of it, like, became overwhelming.
Which that can be pretty powerful. I mean, the mental burden on top of physical burden can take quite a toll on a person.
Indeed, both. And also, you know, as we've talked about this wasn't like a short-term experiment.
No,
this was a long-running experiment. Yeah. And, you know, from 2011, and now we are looking at the beginning of 2014, right? And we are doing all kinds of different training, high intensity training at night and martial arts training on days off, which at times would last up to 2 to 3 hours. Uh-huh. And then idea of like feeling so good that you don't want to stop because you feel like, oh, if I stop, then... it's going to be this domino effect that I'm going to end up being back to square one.
Yeah.
And you're not giving yourself that kind of time to reflect and that kind of... and you're aware that you're getting injured and yet you're continuing to do so. There's that, that you know, that is psychological. And there's your physical and there's your psychological connection right there.
And it's you brought that up within the past couple episodes talking about... looking back on it now, you're seeing things that you don't at the time. And you've mentioned that before, like you're feeling so good, you think you're doing so well that, it, you know, you're not looking at it from those different lenses. And again, what you just said, 2011 to 2014, that's a long period of time with this to happen. So, of course, the burnout eventually comes. Was that something that was it gradual, do you think, looking back now? Or did it hit you sort of all at once?
No, I think it was... these things always build up. You're not like the whole point of burnout is that you're not paying attention.
Yeah.
Right. So they probably have been building up for quite a while. And I no longer was paying attention to those particular variables. And to the point that when I did burn out, I couldn't even, when I did burn out in 2014, I couldn't even look at anything like my journals, even myself. Like I could not look at all of those at the state that I was in, because I think it was and devastating in so many ways. If you think about it, like you and we've discussed this prior, that you are thinking, oh, I'm doing really well. This is fantastic. This is great. I'm proceeding with my thesis. Everything is working out well. And you're wanting it to work. You want it to work out well because you've invested so much of yourself into it. And when those systems fall apart, I think it's it's a difficult process to get up and restart again.
And so what did this burnout look like for you?
Do you mind if I just read? Because I made I made notes on this, and
absolutely.
We'll do a quick reading.
Yeah.
Of this.
So these are your notes from that time period.
These are my notes from February, end of February 2014, when the burnout started.
And that's great.
This is actually burnout happened in February. These are post burnout notes.
This is a post burnout notes.
This is a post reflection of it, because during that entire process that I wasn't paying attention, nor did I want to.
Okay. Nor did you want to. Yeah. That's, again, an important point, right? Like you've brought up before, at the time you didn't want to look at it, but now this is the reflection back, and I think this is going to be a powerful read. Yeah, let's hear it.
Okay. During the preceding weeks, I started to feel quite disengaged from work and then from life and all things of importance. Each day became more difficult than the previous one. I lost interest in cooking, which, by the way, I love. It's like it's the basis of, I think, like one of the reasons I exist on this planet is cooking. And anyone who's seen my kitchen knows that. And anyone who's like, understands.
It's really personal to you. Cooking is a personal.
It's a very personal. Yeah. It's a very nurturing and feeding. All of those things are very important. So if I lose interest in that, we know we're in trouble. This is a serious
point. Yeah.
Lost interest in cooking and in feeding. Nurturing became a burden rather than a sweet privilege. After seeing my family physician, I took her advice and proceeded with a 2-week leave of absence, unpaid. I decided to then proceed full on with karate to see if everyday exercising would break the heavy burden of nothingness that had crept over my entire being. After a set of 3 1-hour classes, so at this point now I'm going in three times, and I'm not doing 2 hours, I'm doing 1 hour, but I'm going for 1-hour classes. But at this point for seeing the same people seemed too much of a task. I couldn't actually deal with people talking to people wanting to interact with other, and these were people I really enjoyed their company. Enjoyed doing movements with them. I very much enjoyed everything being in those particular sessions. So instead of going to my regular classes, I decided to go to afternoon classes where I actually knew very few of my fellow students, and I did not have to interact with them them as much. One night, I found myself practicing with extreme vigor, a kata that I was having a difficult time understanding. And this was the point, actually, that somehow at that very moment, as I was practicing, and it was a very complex kata, I remember, and I couldn't get through, I could not get those movements. And that was the moment that I came to the conclusion. I was like, oh, I actually need to take a complete break from my current reality, for it was no longer serving me well. So my way of dealing with was to actually completely leave Kingston. My son was little, so he was. I was able to pack him up, and I left for Montreal. Wow. Actually, I completely disconnected from here, from everything. I said goodbye to my husband, and I said, I'll be back, and I left. And I went and stayed with a very dear, close friend of mine. And we arrived Thursday in Montreal. It was very, very cold, but I was so glad to be with my friend. So my son and I ended up elongating our stay. We were supposed to be there for a weekend. It ended up being there for 12 days, during which time I allowed myself complete freedom from all the existential burdens. I slept, I walked, I stopped, and I reintroduced wine, because up until that point, I was abstaining from alcohol. Those were one of the variables that I'd completely removed sugar and wine and all of those things I had completely removed from my my life.
Yeah.
And I had great conversations with my friend about everything. And I started to realize at that particular point that how injured I was physically.
Right.
And my circadian rhythms were completely shot. They were all over the place.
Yeah.
Physically, I needed healing. And emotionally, I had become an abstraction. And it was this realization that led me to completely cut myself from work. Actually, I requested a prolonged period of absence, and I took another 4 weeks off from work. And then I returned to Kingston. And at this point, again, it's interesting that I write, upon returning to Kingston, I found myself again in pain. I slowly started to reconnect with myself and actually gave myself permission to just be. It was this permission that allowed my mind and body to heal. I took a break from my mental, physical, and emotional. I took a break from mental, physical, and emotional exertion, and I did not cook much. I did not do intense exercise, and what I did was watch shows on Netflix in bed on my computer. And this was after about a couple of days, I felt somewhat okay. And then I started to go for long walks with my friends. And we would walk and we would talk. I then started to think about how I was going to proceed with my future. I knew that my current work status needed to change. So at this point, I was still on three nights and every 2 weeks a day, which was somewhat flexible, but it was still a pretty heavy schedule and keeping up with, you know, my exercise and all of that. So at this point, so I knew that my current work status needed to change for my body and mind could no longer function in the state that it was. My self-regulation could only take me so far. And I needed to impose less on my own individual systems, for it was no longer sustainable. And at this point, I proceeded with what's called job share, where I shared my position with one of my colleagues.
Wow. So thank you for reading that. I mean, that's such a powerful read. And I think I said to you before we started recording that I feel like these types of stories resonate with people because they can recognize themselves. Even in things you're saying, there's moments I can recognize myself.
Mm-hmm.
And there's moments I can look in my past and be like, yeah, I needed to spend that entire day, that one Saturday in bed watching Netflix. Like that happened. Like I can just see it and picture myself in it. And I feel like that's something that's really important for listeners to be able to see themselves and, mm-hmm. and hear what you're saying and go, oh, I can recognize myself in that.
I think it's like also, you know, which like we have, which is interesting because we have all these interesting episodes coming up ahead of us, which mm-hmm. is going to be talking about this idea of productivity that, you know, in our society, that's like the entire system is built upon. How productive are you? How productive are you? Without realizing that in the end that, that idea of hyperproductivity actually leads to disintegration of not just the individual, but the system that the individual is trying to support, and vice versa.
What sort of supports did you need during this time and when you're feeling burned out by others and other people around you? Like you mentioned that you're able to stay with your friend and that type of thing.
That was actually one of the most. That was crucial. I cannot assert the significance of having that kind of friendship, where that friendship, which she's one of my closest friends, and who opened up the doors and said, "Nope, you're coming here. You're going to be with me, and we are going to be." Looking after you. She herself is brilliant. She's a scientist and in neuroscience. And we've, you know, she's been part of this process as well because she knew what I was going through and doing everything. So it wasn't like, you know, she was cut off. She knew. She was quite aware of everything that I was going through at this particular point. And then to say, no, you need to come here. You need to disconnect from everything and take that kind of break. And it's like behaviors, right? Behaviors, either you want to change them yourselves or you need a shock to your system. So for me, I was already in this kind of state and I realized, oh, I need a complete break from everything. completely everything that I know, my daily routines, my daily behaviors, and take a break and then reorganize my systems. Or I hope that I'm able to reorganize my systems, because at that point I didn't actually know where I was at, to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
And this goes back to the beginning of the case study, whereas why we started the case study, why I started it in the first place, was I didn't know where I was and what I was doing. And then I started this, and then I felt like, oh, am I back to square one again?
Was that a real challenge for you, even though you knew you were burning out and you had a great friend who said you needed this? Was it a challenge for you to say, okay, I'm disconnecting? Considering everything you were doing and the routine you had developed, getting out of that, was that a challenge, or did
very difficult. Mm. I've said how devastating that whole thing was.
Yeah.
And just to say that I was no longer, I didn't want to think about it, I didn't want to look at it, I didn't want to do anything.
Yeah.
Obviously, I mean, like, it, for me, that was a very difficult time at that particular point, because it was, I felt like I had failed in so many ways, which is so interesting, because you're putting the onus on yourself, right?
Very interesting.
You're putting the entire, you're doing everything
you're
supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
You're exercising, you're eating well, which we're going to come and talk about. Mm-hmm. Like, we're going to have entire series on the diet, which is which is so interesting,
mm-hmm.
when we are going to get into that. And that's level of hyper-regulation. So you're regulated, you're doing all of these things that are supposed to help you not survive, but thrive, which is the end goal. I hope the end goal for us humans is thriving and not merely surviving. And you're going against a biological system that is crushing you in every which possible way.
Yeah.
Your rhythm is skewed. Your circadian systems are offline. You're trying to balance all of these things while being a parent, while being a partner, while being a friend, and while being in a community that you are engaged in.
So many layers on top of
so layers. Many layers. Yeah. Layers upon layers upon layers. And then when we say, you know, that these things will make you feel better, and then those things actually end up failing.
Yeah.
It's devastating.
Yeah. Can you talk a little bit more about some of those motivators at the time? I mean, you know, you talked about your, at the beginning, it's like you want to become better and improve your sleep, and it's about, you know, all those relationships and layers that you're working within. When you go through something so devastating, when you're in Montreal, when you come back to Kingston, what's motivating you at that point? Is it just the sense of I have to figure this out and get better, or where is your sort of motivation at that time?
Being a mother.
Yeah.
Number one motivation is always.
Yeah.
For me, I think I wanted. I wanted, again, if being a good parent was incredibly important to me. And I know what impact shift work can have on your mental state, and how you can, you know, like, just thinking about this, Mike, is actually making me quite emotional.
Hmm.
What it can do to you as a parent.
Yeah.
And being aware of those things, I think my motivation was, okay, at this point, also, it's important to understand that I had accrued quite a bit of knowledge in terms of shift work.
That's
and
true. Yeah,
all the
absolutely.
Scientific papers that were coming out.
Yeah.
And I've started studying everything, and I'm looking at these systems, and I'm looking at these variables, and I'm aware of where I am.
Yeah.
Even though I disconnected myself, did not mean that I did not know.
That's true.
Where I was at.
You still accumulated all that knowledge over that time, absolutely.
Yeah. And being aware. I was still aware of where I was, and I was like, okay, so this hasn't worked. And this is where when we talk about resilience, which is such an interesting term
that
we're using every which way now, considering it was first introduced, I think, in 1818.
Really?
It came into scholarly literature in 1818.
Oh,
and
I didn't know
you
that.
Know what it was about?
No.
What the term was used?
No, I didn't. I don't know.
Timber. to really? Look at the bounce back, yeah, bounce back effect of wood.
I didn't know that. That really, that's so
and
interesting.
Then it went into engineering, like look at other materials, and it wasn't until like I have it somewhere, as you know. I have a collection of notes everywhere.
Oh, absolutely.
And then it came into this like psychology and more so resilience, if you're looking at it very much in sports psychology and military and as well as in now, you know, prevalent in academic literature.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I never would have thought that that term and using that word would come from timber. And again, we use it all over the place. We use resilience all over the place to describe so many things.
Yeah.
Even in entertainment and sports and you know, the resilience of the body and all that stuff comes into play.
Thrown around just like that.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
That's so fascinating.
Yeah, I know. It's...
The hidden gems you get on this podcast when you find out where they came from timber.
Oh, it was Thomas, Treadgold.
Okay.
In 1818.
There you go.
To describe a property of timber and to explain why some types of wood were able to accommodate a sudden and severe load without breaking.
I would never have guessed.
Wow, from timber to humans.
To humans, to medical science. That's crazy. That's fantastic. Yeah. That's really cool. I love finding out little bits.
I know it.
In the few minutes we have left, because we're almost out of time, but I was hoping you could give us kind of an idea of as you're going through this burnout and even post burnout, what did exercise start to look like for you at that point?
Oh, it changed quite a bit. I was still doing high intensity training at night because that continued to be effective for me.
Oh, okay.
But what I changed was my training during daytime. More moderate. I had a more moderate approach to training. I gave myself way more leeway during my days off for recovery, and I introduced long hikes, which to this day I continue. That's actually my go-to exercise.
But you introduced it at this time.
I introduced it at that time.
Okay.
I introduced long hikes
because
prior to that, walking wasn't like I walked. I walk everywhere because we're downtown, but not like at that level in terms of that those long periods of hour and 2 hours where I was like, okay. I'll introduce this kind of meditative and then adding meditation on a more regular basis. Actually, meditation came during that process and introduced functional movement training was actually introduced in 2014 up to 2015 because I'd injured myself during post-burnout. I was still doing karate. During karate training, I'd injured myself.
Oh, okay.
That's when I moved to functional movement training as well.
Right.
And long hikes, long walks.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So what? I guess what I'm trying to ask is what made you decide to say, okay, well, the nights are working for me, but the daytime wasn't. So you made those adjustments. Like what factors were you considering?
What nighttime I still needed to do high intensity interval training to just control the variables in terms of like hitting the wall that we discussed. I think that was episode 12 or 13.
Yes.
One of those episodes where we discussed hitting the wall.
Yeah.
Needed to deal with that. And also exercise at night made me feel really good. My sleep was excellent.
Yeah.
Actually, post training, how I would go to sleep, my sleep onset latency, which is a term we use in sleep medicine, and I'm introducing it right now, is the moment you go to bed, lights are turned off, and the first epoch of sleep. So my sleep onset latency was decreased significantly. I would actually would go to bed, and the quality was pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
And it was it elevated me. And also, you know, when we have students coming in, respiratory therapy students coming in, it was a great way to introduce them to that idea of exercise at night, which we still do.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Ruhi. I think this was a very powerful episode. A lot of really, really great insights from you. And thank you for sharing some your personal notes from that time period. I think that was very insightful.
Thank you, Mike.
And thank you to everyone who's listening to the Ruhi Sleep, Sleep and Society podcast, available on ruhisleep.ca. Don't forget that you can peruse the website for blog posts, interesting information in the news all around sleep and society. You can also follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Ruhi Sleep. Thank you for listening.